If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 138. We're going to title this show Social Credits because we want to talk about something that's kind of interesting that I think everybody should know about when you're talking about, particularly in the United States, talking about your freedoms and your liberties as it relates to technology. So, a little background information. And since 2014, China has had a social credit system in place, meaning that basically the government keeps track of your, you know, how your behavior is, whether you're complying with how they feel, how other people feel about you, all this information, and they give you a social credit score, and that score determines whether you can get loans and housing and what jobs you can hold and everything else. You know, and we kind of expect to hear stuff like that out of China just because, you know, they're an authoritarian government. They want to keep their thumb on their people, you know, because they don't want any resistance or rebellion, which they're not very successful at it if you think about what's in the news lately. But that being said, there's a whole bunch of companies, and they include companies that we all know and love. Won't say I love them, but we all know, like Uber and Airbnb, a couple of insurance companies, but they're essentially creating a social credit system to determine things in your life. Now, the flip side of this is the United States has had a social credit system for a while. We call it the credit score, which I think is it should be illegal. One, it should be illegal just on the fact that it's based on your social security number, which is not supposed to be a ID number that people use. That's just supposed to be your personal tax identification number. The government can steal from you.
Thank you.
And, but, you know, whether you can get loans, whether you can get a credit card, whether you can get an apartment is all determined on your credit score. A lot of times, and you know, so this is not something new, but it's something people have accepted and let go on. But it has the potential to get worse because companies like Airbnb can ban you for life from being able to use their service. Same thing with Uber, and they don't really have to give you a reason why. Uber's is. You know, if your Uber rating is far below the average, how does that work? I mean, they can ban you so you can't use their car service. There's a service for restaurants to manage customers, and basically it uses some sort of recognition to determine whether or not you can...
That one is based on facial recognition. Yeah.
You know, whether you're banned from that place. Now, yeah, some of it sounds like it's a good idea. You're banned because you were caught fighting there. You were doing drugs, you know, criminal activity, that kind of thing. But how far off are we from that of being abused? I mean, just how secure is it? Can it be hacked? You know, can you be blacklisted from everything so you can't go to a restaurant and get service? By the way, the law actually states that if you are a store, a restaurant, or whatever that is open for business, that you are open to the public. And they can't really ban you. I mean, they can and they can't. But to ban you requires the police to become involved and a lot of other things. So there's a check and balance there. But, you know, the one that I think is actually the most disgusting, because another group of accepted theft that we allow goes on, is insurance. And so there's a couple of insurance companies, and they started this a few years ago. Every car in the United States since, I don't know when, since the late 90s, mid to late 90s, have what's called an ODBC port. Or actually, it's now ODBC2, and it's a diagnostic port. That's where you plug your computer in as an auto mechanic, and you pull from the computer to figure out if a sensor is bad, or you know, it's to help in aiding in troubleshooting. Well, it also collects a lot of other data too about the car, like, you know, at this time, the car was going 75 miles an hour. Well, now there are these little things that insurance companies, they'll give you a rate break if you're willing to plug it in. And basically you're allowing them to track you, because what it does is it adds a GPS tracker, and then it pulls the information and sends it to the insurance company via cellular data to, you know, hey, Joe Smith was driving 85 miles an hour on Interstate I-71 between, you know, and with the GPS marking, and he can go between mile marker here and here. That's risky behavior. We're going to up his insurance premiums. You know?
Yep.
And, you know, and if you're in a wreck, they use that diagnostic data on your insurance premiums to determine whether it was your fault or you were engaging in what they determine as risky behavior when the accident occurred. You know, and it does make sense. Insurance companies are there to make money, and this is a way for them to make more money. But they're also using this now where they correlate it with social media. So it's not just car insurance, it's now becoming health insurance. And so, you know, if you're posting pictures of yourself climbing, you know, a trail and you're doing a small ascent as part of that, they can charge, they're using that as justification to charge more for your insurance, because the chance of you possibly getting injured could be greater. You know, is that fair? Is that that system? Now, it's very reminiscent. If if you're not a fan of science fiction, you probably haven't watched Black Mirror on Netflix, but there's an episode starring Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter, and it is all about essentially a social credit system where people are forced to essentially be nice to each other so that in their social media that other people will rate them up, and because they lose not only their rights in society with a low social credit score, but they lose their place in society. You know? So, you know, that's the potential harm that can come from any kind of system like this.
Well, every time you mention the Black Mirror episode, I have to mention Star Trek Orville's episode on the same similar
topic. Oh, yeah, where they were going to...
But... The thing to take from all of this is we're allowing these entities, be it government or corporations, more and more access to our private lives, and the level of impact that has, I think, is really yet to be determined. But I don't think it's good.
No. Well, I think another good example of this is the whole idea of precognition and Minority Report.
Exactly. You know? Because that's where it's headed.
Exactly. That's exactly where it's headed. We're going to run this through some data analytics tools and based on an algorithm that, you know... We already get discrimination by this today. So why do males who are between 17 and 25 pay more for car insurance? Because somebody crunched the numbers and they said, well, there's a higher incident of males 17 through 25 who get into wrecks and reckless behavior in cars, so we're going to charge all of them extra money
to mitigate that risk,
as opposed to just handling the few who actually bring the average up.
Now, when this sort of thing first came into being, and there are many applications of it, law enforcement being probably the most insidious, but it's gotten to the point where it affects normal everyday things like Major League Baseball. We're now managing games by a spreadsheet rather than...
Moneyball, man.
You know. But the point there is, we're now trying to quantify everything as a predictor of future behavior. And how accurate that is, I think is still debatable.
I agree. Well, you know, it's this...
We've now taken the age-old philosophical discussion of, is there free will, or is everything predetermined?
Yeah.
And we've now bet our life on it.
Very true. Well, and the other thing that seems to pervade society worldwide today is everybody seems to be living in fear. So I don't know if that was a result of... I mean, when we were kids, 6 years old, when do you get home? When the streetlights come on. I mean, you know, you hear that, but that was really the truth. I mean, we used to go out and play, you know, army, and we played with black plastic machine gun toys that didn't have little orange caps to tell law enforcement that we were, you know, that it wasn't a real gun. Or we would carve them out of sticks we'd find in the forest. Because guess what? As little kids, some of us had pocket knives that we were entrusted with.
But nowadays, a kid makes a finger gun.
Yeah.
A gesture, and he gets sent home on suspension for a week and a half.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing is everybody is so offended because I think they're afraid.
They are.
You know, and that's not a world I want to live in. I don't want my kids to live in a world like that. You can't be afraid of everything.
But this goes back to what I know you follow me on Facebook, so you get the full dose of this. But every time something bad happens in this country,
Russians,
we always have an uprising of we must do something.
Well, yeah,
we must have a law.
It's a knee-jerk reaction. I'm so afraid. And you know, here's the thing that kills me about that is our country was founded on the fact that the government at the time, the British government, had thousands of laws that we had no input into, that we must follow, that were completely unfair and didn't represent the will nor the feelings of the people. And so we became a separate country, and we're slowly turning into all these people because they're in fear. They want the government to be in control of all this stuff. The government is the worst person to handle a lot of these issues, particularly anything that's social. A bureaucracy does not help with things like poverty, your culture, acceptable mores.
But the other side of that coin is trust in corporations to do the same.
Well, you can't do that either.
Right, which is, I think, precisely the point. When we start looking at the Ubers, the Airbnbs...
Oh, absolutely.
The insurance companies, all of that, they each have their own agenda, and that agenda is to make money.
Exactly.
It's not to look out for the people.
No.
And government is not a good counter to that.
No, because those companies are working within this incredible framework of laws that exist, and they have hundreds of lawyers who their whole job is to sit there and look for loopholes. Hey, you know, we can do this because the law doesn't specifically state that we can do this.
Well, and this is where we go back in.
Or the law doesn't specifically prohibit us from doing this.
Right. So the origination point of that philosophy remains a mystery to me. So I don't know.
I think
chicken
that,
and the egg sort of
I
thing.
I think that's all part of the change that happened when Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged became kind of a must-read business book back in the 50s and 60s. You know, there was a huge shift in corporations even where, it was all about the shareholder. And we're seeing that's not working out real well either. You know, there are long-term companies who are like, we've spent so much time in the last 30 years focusing on the shareholder that we're not focusing on the company. Our company's going to crap because we don't care about our employees. We don't care about, you know, it's all about making that extra dollar as for the shareholder as opposed to what's good for the company and what's good for our employees.
Well, and not only that, but what's good for the consumer.
Yes.
This is where...
This kind of goes back to our previous podcast when we were talking about the licensing fees having gone up so great on things like Star Wars and Disney. And you know, so what used to be a $1.99, $2.99 action figure that a kid would get as a, or an adult would collect as a collectible, they're now $30 and $40 and $50. I about fell over the – I was in Walmart, and like I said in the previous podcast, I walked through the – I always walk through the toy aisle just to see what's coming out for Christmas. What, you know, what are the trends in the toys? You know, are we seeing lots of action figures? Are we seeing lots of, you know, dress-up play sets? What, you know, whatever is it? And I'm forgetting what it was that I was looking at. But, oh, Transformers. I have my original, all my original Transformers. My original Optimus Prime, which was an expensive Transformer in its day, was $20. It was bought at Children's Palace by the Dayton Mall.
Uh-huh.
And they're selling, and it was an amazingly built toy. I mean, it's still complete today. It's how well built it was. They're selling crappy all plastic Transformers, and some of them are $50 a piece.
Yeah. That's nuts.
That's out of hand. Particularly if. I highly encourage anybody who's just interested in how toys and the things that shape it, it's called The Toys That Shaped Us. There's it's a series on Netflix, and it's a documentary series, and they go through Barbie and G.I. Joe and Transformers and Star Trek toys. I mean, it's really comprehensive what they go through, and they talk about, you know, a lot of this stuff and where some of the companies who license things, it's just fascinating to find out, you know, behind the scenes, and then to find out, like, Transformers, it's not like Transformers was a toy line that Kenner or Hasbro dreamt up. They were toys that were already being manufactured as by separate companies in Japan, and Hasbro just as a marketing idea put them together and created a story around them, and that's what became Transformers. And you think about that, you know, that's not what Transformers is today. And yet the toys cost 10 times as much, and they're built, you know, 200 times worse, because, you know, the whole idea of obsolescence, we want the toys to break so that kids have to go out and buy new ones.
So the point there is kind of circling back to our initial entry into that sidebar, is we need a new class of entrepreneur who is deeply versed in principles and ethics.
Yes.
And hold fast to them. Unlike say Google, whose motto is don't be evil.
Don't be evil.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And they become what they...
Yeah, exactly. Shun. Well, and don't get me wrong. There are some companies who have stood up, you know, on the side of the consumer and ethical things like on privacy. Apple has been a good defender of personal privacy, and they've at least brought it into their ecosystem. They try to protect your privacy as best they can. They still have to comply with the law. If they come out with a legitimate warrant, you know, and Apple is storing your data, by law, they have to provide that data. But the fact that they wouldn't reverse engineer or make a loop, a backdoor into their encryption on the iPhone over nothing, I'm glad that they stood up. But on the flip side of it is we have people like Attorney General Barr who's saying that Facebook is going to have to disable or make a backdoor for encryption in their products. And I'm like, no. Because if consumers, and consumers are smart, Facebook is not, it's not a dying platform yet, but that certainly could drive the death knell, you know, into their coffin. You lose enough privacy in there, and because
the only reason why Facebook is still alive today is the fact that there isn't a platform out there that has had that level of staying power. Once the alternative,
oh yeah,
finally settles in, Facebook is done.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And it's only a matter of time.
It is only a matter of time. There'll be somebody who will come in with something better. And don't get me wrong. The more the government, any government, forces these things on people, the more likely that the black market will thrive.
Right.
And you know, so there'll be something out there that the government can't track, particularly in the open source world, because that way it's decentralized. There's no government that really controls it.
Well, and again, this goes back to, no matter what it is that government tries to prohibit,
there will always be a workaround.
And there will always be a black market.
That's why they don't like cryptocurrency. Because exactly. No individual government has control of it. Yes, is it volatile? Yeah, that's going to be the nature of it, just because no individual government controls it and manipulates the market. I mean, there's all kinds of proof of China manipulating their currency so that they can destabilize the American dollar and the euro. And I'm fairly certain that's exactly what the Fed does with US dollars, is the Federal Reserve goes through and they manipulate interest rates and things to manipulate the American dollar. And, you know, it's bullshit.
But that's what you expect government to do.
You do.
I go back to the first law of international relations. Every country does
what's in the best interest.
What's in their own best interest.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there are some exceptions to that, but generally speaking, that is how you expect governments to behave.
Yeah.
Corporations do the same thing.
Yep.
So again, this goes back to, what's the alternative to government and corporations, or government and business being the primary focus? This is where individual liberty,
absolutely,
is what this country was actually founded upon, and what we need to rely upon in order to survive and thrive.
Exactly.
Overcoming the fear.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. So, things like, I even read the other day that the term okay is now somehow offensive.
Well, it's the...
Oh, is it the...
It's the hand gesture.
It's the hand gesture?
Because that's the W, and that's the P.
Oh.
For white power. Which is not at all... I mean, that is the American Sign Language letter for F.
Yeah.
We're now going to say that American Sign Language is now
offensive.
Yeah. of white supremacy. But I guess I don't know. I don't get it.
That's just people looking for something to pick at.
But that's the problem with the social media credit.
Yeah, exactly.
Nonsense. It's not based on anything that matters. It's not based on principle. It's not based on values.
It's not based on intent.
It's based on feelings.
Exactly.
And anytime you base anything on feelings, you let rational thought go right out the window.
Yep.
And that's not a society that's ultimately going to have a solid foundation, because feelings always change.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I mean, there's all kinds of things. So let's get in the etymological shift. It's a known thing that we can track. It's actually something quantifiable. about the meaning of words over time. And so, you know, in the 1920s, what was the word gay? It meant happy. You were happy.
Yeah.
So that then somehow was appropriated to represent homosexuals. Okay, you know, and I remember in the 80s, people would say this all the time, that's so gay, you know, and yeah, that probably, but how, I don't know, I just don't find, yeah, it's probably not appropriate to say because the intent is not good, but I don't find it so offensive that I'm going to, you know, get a baseball bat out and beat somebody up over it. I might correct them, but not in a mean manner. And today, it's all about reaction, emotional reaction. I'm going to, and you know, we talk about things like Columbine and all these shootings and things. Not only were those things overreactions to an emotional connection that these people have, because people today are not taught to moderate their emotions. We need to take a lesson from the Vulcans. Everybody needs a couple. In high school, everybody should get a class in Cohen R. But, you know, people are letting the emotions take over, like you said, the rational thought piece of things. And so things escalate very quickly and in a very short time. And then reactions to them escalate very quickly in a very short time with no thought about what the consequences are to the reaction. You know, one of the key tenets of liberty and freedom is that you have the right to do anything, but there are consequences to those actions.
And it's your personal responsibility to accept those consequences and face them head on.
Yep. And there's no sense of accountability with these same people who...
But again, I think going back to the social credit system thing... This is a way to take your personal responsibility, which is a burden,
and let somebody else
manage it for you. And that works great when you're a good guy and are perceived to be a good guy. But what happens when you unintentionally do something that is bad?
Well, we can relate this. So what about people who get, I mean, I've only worked and consulted for the federal government for the last 25 years of my life. And during that time, federal government has managed to lose all of my personal data to hackers 3 times.
And what is the federal government's social credit score?
Exactly. But the same thing, you know. What was it? Which one of the credit scores company?
Equifax.
Equifax got hacked, and so somebody's data ends up getting used, and they don't realize it for a whole bunch of illegal activity, and then the government comes down on them, and their credit score is bad. That person didn't do any of that, but the perception is. And to get that changed is so incredibly, incredibly hard.
Well, and again, this goes back to one of the problems that I have with a lot of these, like, red flag laws, is it takes the concept of due process...
Throws it out the
and
window.
And throws it right out the door.
Yep.
And flushes it down a toilet. There's no reason for that. Due process is a cornerstone of our... functioning way of life in this country.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this social credit system, whether it's for insurance or I forget what the name of the company was who did the restaurant thing. You know, that's going to determine whether good or bad, whether or not due process gets thrown out the window. You know, and the flip side of this is at this point right now, with the country being as litigious as it is, I just can't imagine how many lawsuits are going to be brought into court about grievances about this stuff.
The other other thing that gets tossed out along with due process is the concept of innocent until proven guilty.
Guilty, absolutely. And we have enough of that now. I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
Innocent people who... people have claimed that they did certain things, yet they have to wear an ankle bracelet for 4 or 5 months and are on house arrest, yet there's been no charges, there's been no court cases, there's been... I mean, that's common.
A lot of that stems from the fact that we have a judicial system that is primarily... still focused on monetary evaluation of risk.
Yeah, I mean, you're flight risk if you're rich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing with Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, and not only that, but if you're not rich, you're going to be sitting in jail.
Yeah.
Whether you're innocent or guilty.
Exactly.
Or not. You know, I mean, it's that's the nature of our judicial system. And if we're going to accept that, then we need to fully embrace the fact that you're now guilty until proven innocent. And if that's the case, we have fundamentally changed our country. Barack Obama has succeeded in transforming this country considerably, which is what his stated goal was.
I mean, you know, he added that factor in too with the penalty if you didn't want to be part of, you know, essentially it is a tax. If you have to pay for health care, and it's not like the government health care was cheaper than what you had. As a matter of fact, not only was it not cheaper than what you had, it also made any employer's health care benefits worse that they could provide than before.
That whole thing was a way to try and kill off private insurance significantly enough that government-provided insurance would be the majority way that people got their insurance.
Yeah.
All that really does is limit the amount of choice a consumer has. And anytime that's the case... the consumer loses.
Absolutely. It's astounding to me. I mean, and it's kind of interesting, you know, hindsight is always 20/20 or better. And, you know, you can start seeing where a lot of these things tie together. And again, I want to reiterate, I feel like it's based all on fear. People are afraid to take care of themselves. And accept the consequences of their actions. I don't know. It's just astounding to me. And again, I don't know what culturally we changed, because this was not the case in the 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. I mean, and particularly when you look at the 30s and the Great Depression, and that's when the great social, you know, that kind of boomed out. But from a cultural standpoint, you know, that was not how people felt.
If you were to go abroad and ask what is a characteristic of an American, the idea of a rugged individualist is gone from the American psyche.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And for the bulk of our history, that was the quintessential American quality, was to be a rugged individualist.
Yes.
We've now gotten to the point where we stopped relying on ourselves and started relying on...
something else.
Anything.
Well,
it's
the blame game. You know, I did this because of X. They did that because of why, not I did this because I did it.
Well, and the problem with that is that we have gotten to the point where we stopped thinking about those events and those incidents rationally. We've we've gotten to the point where now even science is based on feelings.
That's very true.
Rather than true analysis of data over a period of time.
Yep. No, it is interesting to see some of, like I said, hindsight's 20/20 or better, and you know there's lots of instances where we've let government and media and minority groups determine the message, you know, and the thing is it's not all wrong. But it's all misrepresented.
The other, the flip side of that though is that it's not all right either.
Correct. That's true.
And the fallacy there is that we have allowed ourselves to buy into, oh, such and such is an authority on such and such a subject, so therefore whatever they say must be true, and we must adhere to it.
Al Gore invented the internet, so.
Well, that's precisely the point.
Yeah.
You and I both know that to be untrue. We also happen to know that he's full of it on a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
But he has established himself to be an authority in such and such a field, and so whatever it is he says about that field is taken to be law.
Yeah.
Well, as Reagan once said, and I'll paraphrase, you know, it's not so much that they're 100% wrong, it's what they think is right isn't necessarily so.
Correct. Well, and that's not to ascribe
intent or ill intent. To what they believe, but that's just it. It's a statement of belief. It's not a statement of fact.
Fact, yeah. But I think today, with a lot of the misrepresentation, I mean, hell, every politician, doesn't matter which side of the aisle they sit on today, they misrepresent things, again, for their own advantage, you know.
The problem is, I think so many of these kinds of things are not being evaluated; they're just being accepted.
Yeah.
And
well, if so and so said it, it must be true.
Well, and we don't examine what the motivations are of said individual. If we were to do that, and then take a look at the statements that are being made, we could then, you know, rate the reliability of the information based on sourcing and reliability and if there's a track record of truth.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't matter if we're talking about politicians or journalism or science. There has to be a track record of truth in order for there to be a level of believability. We've gone away from that because instead of thinking about things, we're going with our heart and we're feeling things because it's easier.
Yeah. Well, and you know,
and just because a lot it's of easier that, doesn't make it right.
No, but you know, and a lot of it is justified under compassion. You know, a good example of that is the FDA made a change that has severely, over the last 30 years, severely hurt the horse industry. And one of those is that in the United States, we no longer sell horses, which, by the way, no matter how much you feel your bond and connection with the horse, and trust me, I know that, owning horses and a horse farm, horses are livestock. Under law, horses are considered livestock. And by God, you don't want them to be considered pets. I mean, House Bill, whatever, would be disastrous for the horse industry in Ohio. What is it? House Bill 205 or something? We talked about it the other day.
Yeah.
But they stopped the fact that we couldn't kill horses for use in other things, whether it's glue or dog food or whatever. So there's this, they don't want to admit it, but there's this kind of open black market that everybody knows about, including the FDA and the rest of the government, where horses that are deemed unrideable, untrainable, have other health issues, whatever, are being sold, shipped up to Canada, being shipped to Mexico, where they're doing the dirty work. But what has happened is livestock that has been overbred, which happens in cows, you know, any livestock, there's no outlet in the United States to take care of them. You know,
there's no horse rescue.
Well, there's horse rescues, but where did the money come from? There's no place for undesirable animals, undesirable livestock, to do with them. And unfortunately, the horse industry has gotten a lot better at policing themselves, particularly around breeding and things like that. But still, we have excess livestock in the United States that we can't do anything with, you know, because the FDA no longer lets them go to the slaughterhouses. And we don't do that for cows. We don't do that for goats or pigs or...
But there again, this is where we have allowed government to regulate
the
something that...
The decision to make that change was based upon the compassion and welfare of horses.
Right, which is...
But the thing is their welfare has gotten worse.
Absolutely. That's the law of unintended consequences.
Look at another good horse-related issue. So we have all the wild horses from out west. Bureau of Land Management has been collecting them up, and they're trying to auction them off, but they have to keep hundreds and thousands of wild horses in these pens, and their welfare is horrible. You know, they're dying because the government can't take care of them, you know, and it would be hard for any entity to take care of that many horses and take care for them well. You know, because the killer is everybody wants the government to do it, but they don't want to pay the government to do it.
Well, I'm less convinced of that, because you and I've had another conversation about activism, paycheck activism, or paying.
Well, they do, but
to do it they rather than actually doing it.
The problem is the Bureau of Land Management, when you look at, everybody looks at, you know, how much they're willing to pay in taxes, or I don't even know if it's willing to pay, how much they pay in taxes, and they look at what they want the focus of that money to go on. It's never that, even though that's something that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah, but you could say the same thing about road maintenance.
Well, that's true. I mean,
the functions of government that are not sexy are really what government was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Government was never supposed to manage.
And here's a question I have for you, and maybe you can answer it, because I just can't find that moment. When, the intention of the Founding Fathers when we created the Constitution, not the Confederacy, but the Constitution, was the same thing, states' rights, individual rights. The reason we're a republic is to protect the rights of the individual, not the many.
Right.
But also it was designed so that states' rights were protected over the federal government, in the sense, with the exception of what was specifically outlined in the federal government.
Right.
You know, in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But the intention was for the federal government to be funded by the states.
Yeah.
And today, we don't have the federal government funding states.
Yes.
Like federal highway, highways provides money back to the...
That's because at some point we've shifted the burden from the states to the individual. When we allowed income tax, federal income tax, we opened ourselves to that very thing. The power of the states then became so weakened.
Yeah.
That now they're not even looked at to be the primary source of funding for roads. I mean, really, our entire infrastructure now is crumbling because we didn't keep ourselves focused on the legitimate functions of government at all levels. But particularly, I think state government has gotten to the point where they're now focused on stuff that is so far out of the purview of what state government should be focused on. Yep. But we've done that at every level. Yeah, well, we could talk about government overreach at the federal level all day long. But it's happening at the state level. It's happening at the regional level. Yeah. It's happening at the local level. We've gotten to the point where we have abdicated our personal responsibility to govern ourselves to some other entity, all the way up and all the way back down.
So tie that back into the social credit system.
Well, essentially, that's what we're now allowing ourselves.
Yeah.
The most basic unit of governments.
Yeah, you're the individual.
We've now allowed ourselves to be governed by ourselves instead of ourselves.
Yeah.
What's the ultimate effect of that? Well, personal destruction of liberty leads to varying degrees of slavery.
Absolutely.
Be it you know, however many varieties there are, economic, physical, emotional, whatever.
Well, you know, and I've always said, you know, social programs, you just change the level of slavery from, you know, welfare is a good example of when you look at a lot of minorities, the disproportionate amount of minorities who are on welfare versus whites and Asians, as a matter of fact, is huge in the United States. And, you know, and those are the same minorities who fought for freedom to not be, you know, personally enslaved. And that's what they've done is they've essentially traded personal enslavement, meaning you're owned by a family or an individual, for institutional enslavement, being owned by a government or institution. Because, I mean, you know, look at it. They manipulate welfare recipients all the time by threatening to cut benefits and all this other stuff. And it's not just welfare. It's disability, Medicaid. I mean, all of these government programs are leveraged to curtail and enslave the individual. And nobody wants to admit that. And it's kind of funny because we correlate this back, you know, did we learn from history? And so, you know, everybody lauds not only the prowess of the government, but the prowess of the individuals that we know as Spartans today who lived in the Greek city state of Sparta. But in one of my history courses in college, the professor was very astute, and he made the statement that Spartans were the most enslaved people in all of the ancient world. And we're all kind of scratching our head. We'd read the book, you know. And why was that? And he goes, well, at the end of the day, because they had, you had the ruling class or the aristocratic class, and then you had the slave class or plebeian class, that the Spartans, the aristocratic class, isn't much enslaved to the slave class because they had to manage them and stop insurrection and everything else all the time. So they were enslaved to each other much more so than
that's the sort of thing you get with a total authoritarian regime.
Exactly.
I mean, and the more and more
look at China.
We embrace that.
Yeah.
The closer to that level of slavery we get.
Absolutely. Well, we want to hear your thoughts, so please send us video, audio, written text to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And reference show 138. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.